This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 228 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. ICYMI, a lot of fantasy-relevant players are on new teams. So on today's show, I'm going to talk about those players. Before doing so, I wanted to remind you to check out NumberFire Premium before the NCAA tournament kicks off. NumberFire has everything you need, from gambling picks to bracket advice, to dominate the big dance. Get your first month of NumberFire's All-Pro package, which is normally $49.99, for just $19.99 when you sign up today with promo code BRACKET. That's promo code BRACKET. Visit NumberFire.com/premium for more details. So Antonio Brown is an Oakland Raider. I know he wasn't a free agent, and this show is going to go over all of the changes made through free agency, but I feel obligated to talk more about this trade. I mentioned it on the Mailbag show last week, but what we've got with the Antonio Brown situation is exactly why target share is an important statistic when we're building projections. Looking at sheer targets isn't always useful when teams run different offenses. The Steelers were the most pass-heavy team in football last year, and Antonio Brown in 15 games had 168 targets. But that accounted for 24.4% of the team's attempts. If Brown had 24.4% of Oakland's attempts last season, he would have finished the year with 136 targets. That's a massive difference. The good news for Brown, though, is that the target share number should increase in Oakland. That's why I said on last week's show that he can still be in that high 160 target range in 2019. I don't think volume is going to be a huge issue for AB in Oakland. He should be able to capture 29 or 30% of the team's attempts. The problem is going to be the combination of touchdowns and quarterback efficiency. Brown was going to regress in the touchdown column this year regardless of where he was, but it's going to be difficult for him to score a lot of touchdowns with Derek Carr versus Ben Roethlisberger. Carr's coming off a 19-touchdown season, and his career touchdown rate is 4.4%. Big Ben's got a 5.1% career touchdown rate, and he's thrown 29, 28, and 34 touchdowns across his last three seasons. The yards per attempt downgrade is there for Carr as well. But I think the big question mark for this Carr to AB connection is whether or not Carr starts to heave the ball deep more often. Now, I'm a believer that average depth of target isn't simply a quarterback statistic. The weapons in the offense can influence that number. That's sort of a logical take, I think. So Derek Carr's A-dot can rise in this situation. He has Antonio Brown now. But I think it's important to still compare and contrast his deep ball tendency versus Big Ben's. Since 2011, Roethlisberger's lowest season in percentage of throws that have gone 15 or more air yards came actually this past year, where he threw it deep on 17% of his throws. His average over this time period is 20.4%. Derek Carr has had multiple coaches and coordinators, but one thing's remained consistent. He hasn't been a quarterback who's pushed the ball deep. His highest season in percentage of throws that traveled 15 or more air yards was in 2015, when 18.5% of his throws went that far. He's averaged fewer than 16% of his passes traveling that deep over his career. So the fear with AB, and you can include Tyrell Williams here, who also signed with the Raiders, is that Carr won't give his pass catchers as much big play opportunity. And that matters for fantasy purposes. When you're gaining yards in large chunks, you're a better fantasy asset. Brown should still be able to finish as a wide receiver one in fantasy football next year. I would be shocked if he didn't see a good bit of volume in that offense. But I don't think that we should undersell the quarterback change. And I also think we have to be cognizant of the fact that players who switch teams tend to not perform as well in fantasy. There's been lots of research done on that topic. So it's a downgrade. It's without a doubt a downgrade. But AB should still be okay enough. And as I said, I'm nervous about the fit for Tyrell Williams, who can be used to stretch the field. But he also should at least see decent enough volume. Like Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham wasn't a free agent. But I feel like I need to go a little bit deeper on the situation than I did last week on the Mailbag episode. I think it's safe to say that OBJ is going to see a quarterback upgrade. Baker Mayfield had a higher yards per attempt rate as a rookie last year than Eli Manning's ever had during Odell Beckham's career. Efficiency shouldn't be the issue. Beckham should be able to add more fantasy points per target. But how many targets will OBJ get? He's going from a Giants offense that's been able to feed him to one where there's probably more competition for targets. And New York actually had the ninth most pass attempts last year. Some of that was because of game script, but Beckham maintained a double-digit target average per game as a result. If we just assume Cleveland throws 574 attempts again here in 2019, in order to maintain that type of volume, OBJ is going to have to see about 29% of the team's attempts. And I actually think that's totally possible. But the good news for this upside is like eightfold. You've got an offensive coordinator in Todd Monken who's not afraid to sling it. And his offenses over the last 3 years have always ranked in the top 10 in the league in pace. What that tells us is that Cleveland could throw a lot of passes this year. So that 570 or so attempt number could end up being too low from a projection standpoint. And as we get higher and higher in the attempt column, that means we can get lower and lower with OBJ's target share projection for him to maintain that 10 targets per game average. Target share is always difficult to project. Forecasting volume accurately is amazingly important for projection purposes, but it's also really hard. That goes for running backs or wide receivers. But analyzing historic target share numbers can always help us be more accurate when projecting. And one thing that's clear about historic target shares is that elite talents will rarely see their target shares dramatically shift no matter the environment. Or I should say, elite talents will always have really high floors in target share. If there's a lack of weapons, that ceiling can rise. But it would be shocking for OBJ to see like a 23% target share in Cleveland's offense this year if he plays all 16 games. This is why Beckham has legit overall wide receiver one upside in fantasy football. Because if the Browns really are pass heavy, and if they run a lot of plays, and given how Beckham was insanely efficient with a worse quarterback, the sky's the limit. And those things can happen pretty easily. I think Hopkins and Adams should probably be ranked ahead of him right now, but you can at least make the argument that Beckham is the top receiver pick this year. Le'Veon Bell was another guy that I talked about on the Mailbag show last week. Volume was never really a concern for Bell, no matter where he signed. Whichever team decided to get Le'Veon Bell, he was going to see volume. So that means we had to, and we have to right now, look at things like the offensive line he'll be playing behind and the efficiency his new offense will have. And I've got to say, of the reasonable places that Le'Veon Bell could go, the Jets are a spot that I'm not a big fan of for fantasy purposes. I'd say it was one of the worst spots that he could land. The Jets' offensive line still needs a lot of help. It's a big downgrade from Pittsburgh. But we also know that Pittsburgh was one of the best places for Le'Veon Bell to be to score fantasy points. The Jets' offense was one of the worst ones in football last year, though. And then we can all agree that it'll be better this season with Sam Darnold no longer being a rookie, but we can't just assume it's a lock that they're going to be like a top half offense in the league. Those are the two big reasons to be nervous about Bell. And then there's Adam Gase. I talked about this on the Mailbag show as well, but Gase's offenses in Miami ran so few plays. Last year, they ranked dead last in plays run. In 2017, they ranked 22nd. In 2016, they were last again. That resulted in very few goal line plays. Over the last two seasons combined, Miami ran the ball just 8 total times from within their opponent's 5-yard line. And they had by far the highest pass-to-rush ratio in that area of the field. So yes, I think that there's some reason to be nervous about Le'Veon Bell. He also hasn't played in a year. He's going to be a workhorse, and this volume alone should give him a nice enough floor, but the ceiling isn't going to be there for Bell like it would other early round running backs. That's why I'm likely to not have a whole lot of him in 2019. Mark Ingram was someone I talked about as a dynasty sell earlier in the offseason. He was leaving New Orleans, he'll be 30 years old in December, and his startup ADP was still close to RB2 range back in January. It just didn't add up for me. He's now a Baltimore Raven. And I think this actually reinforces the idea that he's a great sell candidate in Dynasty. It's not because I think he's going to be bad in 2019. I actually think from a fit standpoint, Mark Ingram makes a lot of sense for Baltimore. But the reason I think he's a sell is because I'm assuming the majority of people are going to boost Ingram's value more than they should, or more than I think they should. Baltimore isn't that unbelievable of a landing spot. It's good and it's one of the best spots a free agent could have gone to, but judging by how people are reacting on Twitter, I think some see it as an elite spot given Baltimore's run-first tendencies. But remember guys, targets are far more valuable than attempts in fantasy football for running backs. Last year alone, an average running back target yielded 2.5 times as many fantasy points in PPR formats as a random attempt did. Even in standard leagues, you're looking at about 1.3 times the value of an attempt. That's super important for this landing spot in Baltimore. Because from weeks 11 through week 16, so these are fantasy relevant games while Lamar Jackson was playing quarterback, no team threw to running backs less than the Ravens did. Ravens running backs averaged 3.5 targets per game over this time, which was the lowest mark in the league. Now, they ranked third in running back attempts during this time. But if you weigh the fact that targets are 2.5 times as valuable as attempts in PPR formats, Baltimore ranked 19th in the NFL in weighted opportunities at running back once Lamar Jackson took over. And I'm high-key nervous about the sustainability of Baltimore's offense, too. Ingram is going to be efficient on the ground. I think he could see more attempts than he's seen in a single season in his career now that he's not in that same type of split backfield that he's been in New Orleans. But I don't see the ceiling due to the lack of passing in that offense. And it's highly likely that Ingram's value in Dynasty right now is the highest it's going to be through the end of his career. He should be a solid enough RB2 in 2019. But I think some are bound to see him as a higher end RB2. I'm not there in PPR formats. And that's why I think he's still fine to sell at this peak. Golden Tate signed with the Giants a couple days into free agency, and it was definitely a head-scratching move. After trading Odell Beckham, the Giants were looking at Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram as their primary pass catchers. And I guess you could include Saquon Barkley in there, too. The clear need for New York was a receiver who could play on the outside. Sterling Shepard's been primarily a slot guy so far in his career, and Evan Ingram's a tight end who can also play there. So what did my man Dave Gettleman do? He signed a player who's made a living in the slot. And I really don't get it. I would assume that Tate is going to play that role primarily for the Giants next season because he's been one of the league's best slot guys over the last half decade. And as I said earlier, the Giants actually threw the ball quite a bit last year. They want to run the football, but it may be easier said than done given the current state of the team. They're likely to see a lot of negative game scripts. Tate could end up being an interesting fantasy value if his ADP is super low and we eventually learn that he's going to be the primary slot guy in New York. That's where he can draw mismatches. And we know that whoever isn't in that spot as frequently between Tate and Shepard will see tougher matchups, and they'll be playing a position they're not as comfortable playing. I mean, Sterling Shepard scored all four of his touchdowns last season from the slot. But here's the thing, and this is sort of skewed by Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley being a part of that Giants offense, but the Giants ranked dead last in percentage of passing yards that went to the slot last season. That's according to PFF slot data. So while I'll like Tate more than Shepard if and when he gets that slot role, this whole situation is just kind of a mess. In what was somewhat of a surprising landing spot, Tevin Coleman signed with San Francisco to be reunited with Kyle Shanahan. It seemed like it meant that Jerick McKinnon's days in San Francisco would be over, and that still could be the case, but Kyle Shanahan said last week that it has no effect on McKinnon, that this signing doesn't matter for Jerick McKinnon, and that means that we're looking at a full-blown committee. It's a very tough situation to break down right now. On one hand, we know the system itself can bring efficient play. Last year, San Francisco running backs finished about average in success rate, which is actually kind of impressive when you consider what they were working with at quarterback. And at wide receiver, really. But there's only so much volume to go around if McKinnon stays in San Francisco. Coleman's upside would come in the form of being a receiver for a team that really doesn't have a lot of depth at pass catcher. If McKinnon is there, that really hurts Tevin Coleman's receiving upside. I said this earlier in the offseason, but I almost feel like the idea of Tevin Coleman is better than Coleman himself. He's been outperformed by a running back teammate in success rate each year in the league. So that includes Devontae Freeman and then Ito Smith this past season. Coleman passes the eye test, but maybe the market was the way that it was for Tevin Coleman for a reason. Now, I admittedly don't have a ton of strong feelings about this signing. Coleman does have a good bit of upside if McKinnon isn't on the team, considering the only player with a locked-in target share right now is George Kittle. And as I've been talking about, targets at running back are more important than rushes. But if McKinnon sticks around, that lowers the target ceiling. And that very well could happen considering Kyle Shanahan said last week, quote, "We were fortunate, very fortunate that we had a chance to get Tevin. Didn't think at all that it would be a possibility going through, but it ended up working out. Going into this, we have at least four backs right now who played at a high level last year, but I don't consider it a problem. I consider it a very good thing." That quote at least makes it seem like he's totally okay with the committee, but time will tell. A lot of people in the fantasy industry seem to roast the Colts after they signed Devin Funchess, but I think that it was actually a pretty smart signing. They're only locked into his contract for this year when they have a ton of cap space, and it's somewhat of an incentive-based deal. It's really not that big of a deal. And I feel like I'm on an island when I say that I think people are giving up on Devin Funchess a little bit too early. This isn't a Kelvin Benjamin situation. Benjamin was 24 years old during his rookie season. Devin Funchess is 24 years old right now. And Funchess played tight end for a lot of his college career. So he not only was young entering the league, but he was still somewhat in a transition to playing wide receiver full time. He dealt with an injury last year, but let's not forget his 2017, where he finished with 840 yards and 8 scores on 111 targets. He straight up beat out Kelvin Benjamin considering Benjamin was sent to Buffalo. The Colts needed depth at wide receiver too. They needed a body. And considering the only wide receiver with a target share higher than 12% on Indy last year was T.Y. Hilton, there's a chance for Devin Funchess to immediately walk into volume in 2019. Funchess is still young, he's got production at the NFL level, and his contract makes it so that if he's good, then the Colts can work out a longer-term deal. But if he's not, then they can just move on. And if he becomes the team's number two receiver, he's got a chance to be relevant in fantasy football. The Jets didn't just get Le'Veon Bell on the offensive side of the ball last week, but they also signed Jamison Crowder. I think Crowder's a good player, but it's hard to be super bullish on the passing attack right now. And data doesn't suggest that New York will be targeting the slot at a higher rate than any other team. Last year, they ranked 14th in percentage of passing yards that went to the slot, and Miami ranked 22nd. That Miami ranking is obviously relevant because of Adam Gase. What this Crowder signing did was hurt Quincy Enunwa, though. You guys might remember the start of last year when Enunwa was basically leading the league in target share. Over the first 4 weeks of the season, he was averaging almost 14 PPR points per game while seeing no fewer than 9.7 in a single contest. And then from week 5 on, he scored more than 5.2 points once. And it's because Jermaine Kearse started playing the slot more. Enunwa's slot snap rate was a very, very nice 69% over those first 4 weeks, and it fell to 35% from then through the end of the season. So if he's not in the slot where a lot of his production came from, his fantasy numbers are likely to suffer. But none of these pass catchers are going to be early round selections, so it's hard to sit here and say that I won't be drafting any of them. Enunwa is just the one that I'll probably be avoiding the most. Latavius Murray signing with the Saints is a pretty big deal and probably has bigger fantasy ramifications than you realize, unless you're a huge Latavius Murray truther. Since 2011, New Orleans running backs as a team, they've ranked first, 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 second, first, second, first, and first in PPR scoring. I'm not kidding. Over the last 8 years, Saints running backs have finished first in fantasy scoring 6 times, and the 2 times they didn't, they ranked second. And here's the thing. While doing all this, New Orleans hasn't used one single workhorse back. Over this time, the highest rushing share seen by a back in a single season was about 55%. And we only have 3 instances where a running back had over 42% of New Orleans' total carries. Those 3 instances were from Mark Ingram, but 42% or even 50% isn't that significant of a number. In 2018 alone, 10 teams had a rusher with a rushing share north of 50%. So you can do the math here. Alvin Kamara's highest rushing share in the NFL is 41% thus far. Even if he sees an uptick to 50% or even 55%, you're still getting a good chunk of work from Latavius Murray. That's especially true with the Saints' overall offensive shift over the last 2 years. They were more pass-heavy last year than they were in 2017 in neutral game scripts, but gone are the days of Drew Brees throwing it 650 times a season. The bottom line is that it's one of the best environments for a running back to thrive. Saints running backs aren't used as workhorses, and they're a run-heavy team compared to the rest of the league. If people don't buy into Latavius Murray and his ADP ends up being in the mid to late rounds, I'm going to be all about that life. Adam Humphries signed with Tennessee after apparently almost going to New England, and this has an effect on Corey Davis. Davis was a disappointment last season, and the hope for anyone who's invested in him in Dynasty is that he take the next step this year. Marcus Mariota was banged up in 2018, and things just really didn't come together for the Titans offense. You can at least find reasons as to why Davis finished with fewer than 900 yards and only 4 touchdowns. The Titans signed Humphries to play the slot for them. That's where he excels. He had the 5th most slot yards in football last year, and he ranked 6th in percentage of snaps played there. He's a slot receiver. Well, 34% of Corey Davis's yards came from the slot last season when he played 30% of his snaps there, and he scored 3 of his 4 touchdowns from that area of the field, according to Pro Football Focus. And then on top of that, Tennessee's likely to be a pretty run-heavy team where there's just not a ton of volume to go around. I mean, Corey Davis only had 112 targets last season, despite finishing 7th in target share at wide receiver. That's why this signing is scary for fantasy purposes for Corey Davis. Humphries is going to demand looks, so it's unlikely Davis is able to sustain that type of target share in the offense. And when that happens, that means his overall volume is going to dip. And that's while playing less in the slot. So it's a move that makes sense for real football, but I worry about everyone on Tennessee getting hurt by it aside from Marcus Mariota. One of my more controversial takes through the free agency period so far was that the Chiefs signing Carlos Hyde was actually a win for Damian Williams' fantasy potential in 2019. And it's more of a logic one, or one where I'm trying to read the Chiefs' front office. To me, the Chiefs were going to sign someone. They were going to get another running back. So they could have gotten a lot of directions in free agency. They could have signed someone like Tevin Coleman or Mark Ingram or even Le'Veon Bell, though that was unlikely. Or they could have signed a lower-tiered runner like Mike Davis or something. But they got Carlos Hyde. They got a player who's now been on 3 teams in 2 years and someone who's been outworked by his teammates in success rate in each of his last 2 stops. Carlos Hyde may be the perfect back for Williams because he's not good enough to where Williams will completely lose his job, but he is good enough to where the Chiefs may now forego using a day 2 pick on a running back. Now, I don't know if that's the case or not. My feelings have always been that the Chiefs couldn't really afford to use an early pick on a running back given their current roster, and they also don't have to. But I do think having Carlos Hyde on their current roster at least lowers the chances that they do. And if you've got Damian Williams, who would you rather see him compete for touches with? The upside of a round 2 or 3 prospect, or the soon-to-be 29-year-old running back who was traded mid-season and was the opposite of effective in both spots last year? If you thought Williams was going to see an insane workload next season, then maybe you hate the Hyde pickup. Maybe you're angry about it. But I don't think that was ever a reasonable assumption. That's why I think Hyde being there is good for Williams, considering what the alternatives could be. I'd rather Williams compete against him than completely lose his job to an earlier round pick. I thought the John Brown signing made a lot of sense for Buffalo from a real football standpoint. And to a degree, I think you could say the same about Cole Beasley. But I think you've got to be nervous about their fantasy potential in Buffalo with what we saw from Josh Allen last year. John Brown is a fun receiver with big play potential. And the obvious reason the signing makes sense is that you're now pairing him with a big arm in Josh Allen. The problem is that Josh Allen has the arm, but not the accuracy. At least he hasn't shown it yet. In 2018, no player threw it 15 or more air yards at a higher rate than Josh Allen did. The only problem was that his completion percentage on those throws was only better than Ryan Tannehill's. So he'll need to be better there for us to see more consistency with John Brown. The Bills also aren't going to be a very pass-heavy team, so it's another reason to not overvalue this Brown signing. Now, Cole Beasley isn't someone who's really going to bring forth heated debates, so I'll just leave him aside today. His ceiling isn't likely to be there, and that's true no matter where he went. The best descriptor for Cole Beasley is that he's fine. Cole Beasley is fine. But I will say, Cole Beasley's signing hurts Zay Jones a good bit in this offense. Zay played 48% of his snaps from the slot last year, and he caught 25 of 39 targets from there. That's good for a 64% catch rate. When he was elsewhere, that catch rate dropped to 49.2%. So with Beasley in town, Jones won't see nearly as many slot snaps, which will undoubtedly lower his reception total. The last player, or I guess team, that I want to talk about on today's show is the Steelers and Dante Moncrief. The Steelers needed depth at wide receiver, so it's not a surprise that they got Moncrief. Nothing really stands out about Moncrief's sole season in Jacksonville last year from an advanced metric standpoint. He was pretty much in line with other receivers there in terms of efficiency and success rate. He's been hurt throughout his career, but he's had some production. But it's another instance where he's a player who's sort of underwhelmed and at the same time is still pretty young. Moncrief's now played 5 NFL seasons and he's still not even 26 years old. That alone is kind of intriguing. He actually ranks 64th in NFL history in touchdowns scored at wide receiver before turning 26. There's your irrelevant stat for the day. Moncrief will compete with James Washington for that number 2 job in Pittsburgh. And to be honest, I'm not even sure one of them truly emerges. I like James Washington a lot coming out last season, but he didn't show a whole lot during his rookie year. So he's in this weird spot from a dynasty perspective where you could hypothetically buy him right now if his cost goes down due to the Moncrief signing, but you could also hypothetically sell him right now because people don't give Moncrief enough credit. So James Washington is probably just a hold. There are really just two pieces of this Pittsburgh passing attack that look favorable right now. I have a feeling that Juju Smith-Schuster is going to come out in some projection models as this year's top receiver. I mean that. When you lay it all out and look at how pass-heavy the Steelers have been, the target share potential for Juju, how good he's been and how good he's been at such a young age, you can actually make that argument. And since projection models aren't going to be as swayed by narrative, he's going to look really good. So I won't be shocked if by after the draft is over, when more and more projections are coming out, that we see some really favorable numbers for Juju. Vance McDonald's the other player who won free agency. There's no proven number 2 receiver in Pittsburgh now, and Jesse James signed in Detroit. James saw his target share drop pretty dramatically in 2018 because of McDonald being there, but he still ranked 22nd in routes run at tight end, according to PFF. McDonald really does have a lot of upside this year. He's going to be a perfect later round target at the tight end position. So my Steelers-related feelings are as follows. They won't be as pass-heavy as they were last year for a lot of reasons, like natural regression and Antonio Brown not being there. Even still, Juju Smith-Schuster legitimately can be in the conversation of being the number 1 wideout in fantasy. I don't think that's where we should rank him, but his range of outcomes is there. And Vance McDonald has a real opportunity to see a lot of volume thanks to lack of competition. And I do think it's premature to hand out the number 2 wide receiver spot on the team. I think they still go out and get someone in the draft, and Moncrief is pretty decent competition for James Washington, given he's still a younger player. So that's where my head's at right now with the Steelers. But that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on iTunes, please, please do me a solid and leave me a rating and review. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. If you have a question for this week's mailbag show, you can send it there, or you can email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later this week.